Good morning. I'd like to call the meeting of the House Education Committee to order. It is 8:07 a.m. Monday, March 2nd in the Betty Davis Room, 106 in the Capitol. Members present are, from right to left, Rep. Eichscheid, Rep. Underwood, Rep. Schwanke, Co-Chair Rep. Himmelschut, myself, Co-Chair Andy Story, then we've got Rep. Schwanke, Rep. Dibert, and Rep. Elam. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum for conducting business. Please take time to silence your cell phones during the meeting. Thank you very much for that. I want to thank Kale Brown, the House Education Secretary from Records, and Chloe Miller from the Juneau LIO for staffing the committee today, and our co-chair committee aides, Tammy Smith and Ella Lubin. Today, the House Education Committee has a very interesting and full schedule. We will be hearing HJR 39, waive visa fees for teachers, sponsored by Representative Galvin. Welcome, Representative Galvin. And House Bill 358, Career and Technical Education Grant, sponsored by Representative Elam. And under bills previously heard, scheduled, House Bill 240, sponsored by Representative Nelson, and House Bill 246, sponsored by Representative Josephson. At this time, I'd like to invite Representative Galvin and her staff, Dan Hires, to the table. Please identify yourself for the record and begin your presentation. And I believe we will have some invited testimony this morning, Lisa Parody and Jennifer Schmitz. So please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Story. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Thank you to all members of the Education Committee for hearing this resolution. I don't think there will be too many surprises to you when you hear that we are unfortunately without enough educators before students. And so we are facing a really tough time in recruitment and retention of teachers, especially in rural and remote communities. Many school districts across Alaska use international recruitment to fill our school vacancies, with cases of international hires filling 60% of the total teaching staff in Western Alaska and the North Slope. And as the state is working, we've heard last week about how hard they're working to grow our own teachers. We are still facing this gap. And in rural Alaska especially, where J-1 teachers cannot work due to the constraints regarding health care and other infrastructure pieces, our H-1B teachers are very important to us. And with the new, the most recent proclamation by the president, we now have an imposition of a $100,000 fee for any employer who is hiring H-1B. So, and that happened on September 22nd. So any new ones coming in will be having to face that cost, at least our school districts will. And so this is insurmountable. And really the reason I'm doing this, I think a lot of people know about this, but why a resolution? Well, it's because the senator asked me to do it. Senator Sullivan said that resolutions help, that when they can go back to D.C. and say, look, all 60 of our representatives say this is important, it's critical, then it gives me what he described was it gives him the tool that helps share his story. He knows it's a critical. I think you may have the letter in front of you as well. He's written one. I know that the other senator also appreciates the situation, as does our representative. But really what we're doing is we're giving a tool. And I have my staffer, Mr. Hires, Mr. Hires, who is here to give you a little bit more context. And then, as you know, we do have very brief invited testimony just to really, truly answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
For the record, Dan Hires, legislative intern to Representative Galvin. So, yeah, these visas are They serve as an international recruitment mechanism for these schools. It's an irreplaceable component of their staffing efforts. The percentages that it makes up of their staff, if it's not filled by H-1B visa holders, will more than likely just go unstaffed. And with the projected $90 million budget deficit for the school year of 2026 to 2027, they're already going to have a really hard time filling these positions. They're going to have less positions to be filled, and that means more students going without teachers. So this resolution is asking for waivers from the federal government for these fees because our school districts will not be able to withstand that tax, and they just simply won't have the numbers that they need. Yeah, that's the conclusion.
Thank you for those comments, and I am wondering if there are any questions from the committee at this point, or would you like to hear, or we could go to the invited testifiers first. Rep. Eichheit.
Thank you, Co-Chair Story. Through the Co-Chair, thank you, Rep. Galvin, for bringing this forward. I had an experience this during interim where I met with some folks in the Anchorage School District, and I was surprised to learn how many visa holders we have among our educators in Anchorage. I always thought it was a rural Alaska situation. So just curious, do you have a number of how many folks hold J-1 and or H-1B visas in Anchorage School District?
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Eichheit. I appreciate that question, and I cannot give you the exact number for Anchorage alone, although I suspect that our invited testimony will be able to do that. I do want to clarify for the record, and also for the record, this is Elise Galvin, Representative Elise Galvin. I don't believe I introduced myself, that when we referenced a $90 million deficit, that was for Anchorage alone. That was not for the state. For the entire state, I don't have that figure, but it is over $200 million, I believe, when you add up all of the districts telling us how what their deficit currently is. And many of these districts no longer have reserves, which they relied on in the past. So back to the question about the number. The difference for Anchorage is that they have a few more J-1 visas, and the visas – J-1 visas are a little bit easier. The unfortunate piece, though, is that they can't stay as long. And so we know in education, the longer the adult is in the building and has developed relationships with their educational skills, typically the students achieve higher results. So we do want to encourage the longer the better, and certainly in rural Alaska that's true as well. And like I said, there in Anchorage, because we have facilities that are able to help with housing, health care, and pieces like that, we are able to a little bit more easily attract and retain teachers who would be on visas. I should say educators, because they're not always teachers. Sometimes they're helping in the classroom, and they all count.
Thank you.
I've seen no further questions at this. Oh, Rep. Schwanke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rep. Galvin, I was just kind of curious. Do we have information on other states? We know recruitment is an issue, retention and recruitment. So.
Statewide, nationwide, it is an issue, and I think – that it's possible that one of the invited testimony will have a better answer to that. I do not have this nationwide number, but I can tell you that we are unfortunately not able to provide. We're the only state in the nation that doesn't have benefits, retirement benefits statewide for all. We do have them in some districts, but not all. And so, and our wages are next to the closest state to us, which would be Washington. According to Ms. DeFeo from the ICER study in at the University of Alaska, our wages for educators is on average 30% less than Washington State.
Quick follow-up?
Mm-hmm. Follow-up.
I, I'm not sure you meant to say that some of our districts don't have benefits, because all of our school districts have some form of benefits, health care, retirement. We don't have pensions. Is that what you meant to say?
Some of our districts do not have retirement benefits that are the same as others. So the new hires, I should say, don't have a retirement plan. They do have benefits. They do have health care, and it's different in, among all districts, so that's sort of difficult to compare. But they do have some benefits. They're just not the same. They're not a, there's not a retirement plan for new hires in every district.
Follow up. Am I misunderstanding this? I mean, PERS is tier four and TERS is tier three, but they all have retirement plans. They're just a portable plan, correct?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Schwanke, my understanding is that Tier 4 does not have the same opportunities or anywhere near the same opportunities as others have had with regard specifically to the retirement plan piece. I do not know all of the details of that, though. I'm really here about this resolution, so I could get back to you if that's something you need me to get back to you on, because I really can't address it with any integrity, to be honest.
All right, we're good.
Thank you. Rep. Diver.
Good morning, through the co-chair to Rep. Galvin. Thank you for this, bringing this forward. Last summer, I had the opportunity to travel to a rural community, Arctic Village, last summer, and I got to see their summer program, and I met the teacher who was she was on a visa. I'm not sure if it was which one it was, but she was there roughly 3 years. And what I saw was that she brought her teenage daughter with her too, so she was also in school. Just very connected to the community, had tight connections with the family through making sure to phone call home to the parents, and she was just really amazing. And we went to a softball game that night, and she was there, so very involved. I was wondering, my question is, do the teachers that come over on a visa, do they get some kind of training, like, hey, you're going to Arctic Village, like, this is the language that they speak out there, you know, Gwich'in. Do they get some kind of training when they are going out to rural areas in Alaska? Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Dibert, through the chair. Yes, they do get training, and thanks to the Alaska Council of Superintendent and their work there has been critical to helping to acclimate school leaders and school educators both, because we know that typically anyone entering into a school in rural Alaska have never seen anything like it. And so even before they come to Alaska, they are given a lot of information. They have made videos. They have helped them to understand what they're walking into. And then once they get here, there are little things like helping them understand that they're going to, if they want to have certain foods or certain comforts, they'll need to purchase that in the bigger cities and things like that. So there's a lot of support around these educators and educational leaders, but you can hear more if you have questions from the folks who are set up to speak to you as invited testimony. They are doing that work. Thank you very much for that question.
Thank you very much, and that's a good segue into hearing from our invited testifiers. So I am going to first ask Lisa Parody, the Director of Alaska Councils of School Administrators, to please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Madam Co-Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dr. Lisa Purity. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators, or ACSA. ATSA represents district and school leaders across Alaska who are helping to ensure every child has access to a high-quality public education. We strongly support HJR 39 and appreciate the sponsor for bringing it. Alaska is already facing a severe teacher shortage, as you're aware. At the start of the school year, we had, at last report, 345 first-day teacher vacancies, which equates to thousands of Alaska students beginning school without a teacher. Many Alaska districts, especially rural and remote communities, struggle annually to fill critical positions. International educators are not a luxury. They are an essential part of Alaska's education workforce. At last count, Alaska currently employs 573 international teachers, 341 working under H-1B visas. Without these educators, class sizes increase, course offerings shrink, student services are reduced, student outcomes suffer. I know of at least, in answer to one of the questions that was asked, I know of at least 35 other states that are also dealing with this. One example is my colleague in Texas, who shared with me that Dallas School District has over 100 H-1Bs working, 40% of them are special education. So this will be a tool for our congressional delegation, and I'm aware that Senator Sullivan is working on a multi-state letter in the Senate with Senator Scott from South Carolina. This is a national issue, although I believe Alaska may be one of the states with the most to gain from getting an exception to this executive order. The executive order increase H-1B visa cost to $100,000 per educator per year, and that would place an extraordinary financial burden on Alaska school districts. Districts would be forced into the impossible choice, pay millions in visa fees and cut student programs, or go without teachers and leave classrooms uncovered. Neither option is acceptable for our students and children in Alaska. Rural Alaska, I think, would be proportionally harmed, although districts across the state and urban districts are also using H-1Bs. Rural districts rely heavily on H-1B educators due to geographic isolation and limited applicant pools, and to the fact that J-1 visas are no longer being placed in rural Alaska. Frankly, at this point, districts recruit year-round and must recruit and secure educators months in advance of the school year. So uncertainty around this visa situation will certainly create instability for students and families. Stability in staffing is directly tied to student achievement, school climate, and community trust. International educators do strengthen Alaska community, but I appreciate Representative Dybert speaking to the fact that our H-1B and J-1 teachers contribute to local economies, and they integrate into the communities, and they bring often multiple years that provides continuity and stability. They are valued members of the Alaska communities, not just temporary placeholders. So in closing, Alaska cannot afford to lose so many qualified educators overnight, and most importantly, Alaska students cannot afford more empty classrooms. HJR 39 is necessary, and it's a pragmatic step to support our congressional delegation to protect Alaska students, support school districts, and stabilize our education workforce. We respectfully urge your support of HJR 39, and my colleague Jennifer Schmitz, who will follow the testimony, has more information on specifics by districts to answer some of those questions. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Dr. Parody, for your testimony and for your work on behalf of students and across the state. Do I have any questions at this point for Dr. Parody? Seeing none, I am going to move on to Jennifer Smits, Director, Alaska Educator Retention and Recruitment Center with the Alaska Council of School Administrators. Welcome. Please introduce yourself, Ms. Smits, for the record, and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and Co-Chairs and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jennifer Schmitz. I serve as the director of the Alaska Educator Retention and Recruitment Center, and we work directly with districts across the state to support recruitment and retention. of our educators. This includes international hiring. There was a few questions earlier. We do start at the very beginning with recruiting, with screening teachers, with interviewing. We do a lot of meeting with teachers prior to them coming to the U.S. To get them ready for where they're going. We try to find somebody in the districts to Zoom with them to see actually where they're going to be living, where they're going to be teaching, support them through the certification process and anything they need. So I'm definitely here in strong support of HJR 39. As you've heard, we have over 500 teachers working on visas, 341 on H-1B visas. To answer the question about Anchorage, Anchorage School District currently has 66 teachers working on visas. Those are all J-1 visas. We currently have four teachers that we hired last fall, right around the time, just too late for the proclamation, that are stuck in the Philippines because of the proclamation. And these districts have already paid for these teachers, the required costs, and the classrooms have remained open all year. And those teachers are waiting for, at least one of them had already resigned a job in the Philippines to come over. So it's been really tough for people. As you heard earlier, we can no longer reliably place J-1 teachers in many Alaska communities because of requirements and infrastructure limitations, access to hospitals, grocery stores. So as a result, districts that once relied on J-1s must now transition to H-1Bs for long-term stability. And this means that really this fee doesn't just affect future hiring, it's threatening the stability of the workforce that is already in Anchorage, in Alaska, excuse me. We have been working, as you heard from Dr. Parody, with Alaska's congressional delegation on the issue, and they do understand the urgency. However, I believe that passage of this resolution will really send a stronger, unified message that Alaska's legislature stands behind its districts and its students. And to be truly candid, I don't know what's going to happen to many of our districts over the next 1 to 2 years if this proclamation remains in place. Districts simply can't absorb a $100,000 per teacher fee, and they can't replace hundreds of international educators overnight. And I just don't believe that we can ask our students to wait while we try to find alternatives that don't exist. In many rural communities, losing even one international teacher will mean combining classrooms, cutting course offerings, or leaving students without access to certified instruction in certain critical subjects like math, science, and special education. It's not theoretical, it's immediate, and it's consequential, and I respectfully urge you to support this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I see that we have a question from Rep. Hemshute.
Thank you, Co-Chair Story. I don't know that I have a question per se. I just want to make a couple of comments. And while I support this resolution, I want to point out some information that I think the committee would benefit from knowing. In 1980, Alaska paid teachers at 170% of the national average. In 1990, that slipped to 130%. In the 2000s, early 2000s, we slipped to 110%. We now pay teachers lower than the national average. So when we ask ourselves, how did we get in this situation? Why do we need teachers from overseas? I think the answer rests with us. In addition, I just want to point out, I was once a candidate, and we had a resolution last year talking about the value of these international teachers, so this is a nice resolution with the $100,000 thing to be able to follow up on that. But I had the opportunity to do an international teacher exchange. Ultimately, my partner teacher had to pull out of the program, and I was not allowed to do the exchange, but I did go to the training session for the exchange, and it was extensive, what it takes to live in another country, much less work and teach in another country, is immense. So tremendous respect for these teachers, but the underlying problem, we can't lose sight of the underlying problem. So I support the resolution. I'm grateful to our teachers from overseas. And this is a Band-Aid on a gushing wound. So thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Ms. Schmitz, for your testimony. I do not see any other questions at this time, so I am going to open public testimony for HJR 9. to waive visa fees for teachers. Testifiers will have 2 minutes for their testimony. I want to remind the listening public that it would that if they would like to testify, they may call into the LIO office using the following telephone numbers. In Juneau, 907-586-9085. In Anchorage, 907-560-563-9085. And in all other areas of the state, 907-586-9085. Public testimony is now open. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? Seeing no one in the room. I'm online. Online, I do not see anyone to testify. So I will close public testimony. Any further questions from the committee? Seeing none, I am going to hold HJR 39 over at this time and set an amendment deadline for Thursday, March 5th at 5 p.m. I did want to comment that Rep. Galvin had noticed a letter that was provided to the committee from Senator Sullivan, and that was actually to the House Education Finance Subcommittee. So we will get a copy to that letter to remind us all about that letter, and we will make sure that's posted on BASIS. So, again, thank you. Thank you for your work on this. Next, we are going to hear from Representative Elam on House Bill 358, Career and Technical Education Grants. I invite Representative Elam and his staff, Kendra Broussard, to the table. Please identify yourself for the record and begin your presentation. I also believe the Department of Education and Early Development is online if you have any questions regarding the fiscal note. So, Rep. Elam, thank you very much for joining the table to testify, and please begin and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. I am Bill Elam. I am representative to House District 8 on the Kenai Peninsula, and allow Kendra to introduce herself as well.
With the chair, my name is Kendra Broussard, just after Representative Elam.
Welcome.
All right. Just getting a little situated here, so one moment. All right. Thank you. Really appreciate the opportunity to be able to present House Bill 358 here to the committee. And so House Bill 358 is designed to do a couple of things, but mostly it's designed to help our students and our staff and our schools and faculty to be able to better serve our students who are trying to get into careers, whether that's in the trades or if that is middle college, a variety of things. And it also tries to address some of the issues that we've had with some of our remote and rural schools as well. They've not always had a lot of opportunity for access to some of the programs that we're able to build in some of our larger facilities. My home district is the Kenai Peninsula, so we've had the privilege of being able to have a variety of programs ranging from Yamaha outboards to computer technologies and network administration and nursing and middle college, very, very wide range of things. And so the thought behind this is to be able to give students across the state access to similar programs. And so if you live in, say, Dillingham or Bethel, and maybe they don't have an outboard repair program in their CTE program, the grant program here incentivizes larger districts to be able to potentially host or have some shared facility spaces for, say, a boot camp type scenario where if a student is in, say, Dillingham and the Kenai Peninsula, for example, wanted to have a shared facility where they host some students from Western Alaska or wherever, or maybe, you know, we currently have cohorts around the state in Southeast and in Western Alaska and, again, around the state. You'll hear more of that from some of our invited testimony. Excuse me. You can bring those students to the program that we have there on the Kenai or in Anchorage or Fairbanks, the Mat-Su, or down here in Southeast. You guys have a beautiful shipyard coming in. You can't do a shipyard in Fairbanks. So, you know, why not be able to leverage some of these things that we have that are more regional in nature? And so that's really kind of the efforts behind this particular bill. It does do some incentives specifically towards outcomes. And so what we're looking to do is see engagement in school, in academics, you know, reading, writing, you know, your core engagement within your academic experience there. And then also we want to see maybe pre-apprenticeship or certification programs or pathways for maybe a CNA or a nursing program. Really the only limitation here on this particular program is your imagination, because, you know, if it's a job and we can show engagement and improvement in your outcomes, that's sort of the destination.
Through the chair, I can go through the sectional analysis.
Yes, please identify yourself
for record. Kendra Broussard for the record.
Thank you.
Section 1 amends Alaska Statute 14.07.028 to add a new duty for the Department of Education and Early Development to collaborate with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development to identify and expand pre-apprenticeship and work-based learning opportunities for secondary students using existing workforce and training programs where practicable. This reinforces coordination between education and workforce systems. Section 2 makes a conforming amendment to AS 14.07.020A as previously amended to include the same collaboration requirement between the Department of Education and Early Development and the Department of Labor and Workforce Development regarding pre-apprenticeship and work-based learning opportunities for secondary students. Section 3 adds a new Article 17 to Alaska Statute 14.30, establishing the statewide Career and Technical Education Mobility Grant Program. A creates a program to encourage participation in CTE by enabling students to attend programs in other districts, establishes prioritization for funding when appropriations are insufficient, with preference for small, limited capacity, rural or remote districts where distance or transportation barriers increase cost. B authorizes grants to host districts to reimburse incremental student-specific costs of serving out a district students, including certain infrastructure and equipment needs, with limits tied to performance grants. C creates a performance-based incentive grants and prohibits regulatory caps on total grant amounts, requires the department to consider measurable outcomes such as certifications, apprenticeships, dual credit, and job placements, as well as improvements in relevant academic and workforce supporting skills. D establishes facility and equipment modernization grants for CTE programs, prioritizing shared multi-district use and considering programs performance and industry partnerships. E directs the department to minimize administrative burdens by using existing reporting systems and data sources where possible. F requires the department to adopt regulations to implement the program. G provides definitions for career and technical education, host district, and school districts. And this section is the core of the bill and creates the framework to support student mobility, reward successful outcomes, and modernize the CTE capacity statewide. Section 4 amends Alaska Statute 44.31.020 to add a duty for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development to collaborate with the Department of Education and Early Development to identify and expand pre-apprenticeship and work-based learning opportunities for secondary students, aligning workforce development's efforts and secondary education. Thank you.
Thank you. Bill Elam, for the record. Just a couple of final thoughts here. We do have a presentation if you guys would like to see some of that. And we also have some invited testimony, you know, again, all depending on the schedule and how we want to work through the times. One of the goals that we have here is also to try to tie some workforce development and help across the state, also within the Department of Education and the Department of Labor. We have pockets of things that we're doing really good, but we're trying to connect some of these. So we still want to respect boundaries and where districts are and the different institutions, if you will, in this process. But we do want to establish some assistance in helping them be more collaborative. We want to see, you know, some of the pre-apprenticeship. What happens to students whenever they leave high school? Are we just done? You know, I mean, we want to help people kind of get and make that next step, bridge those gaps. And then also to help incentivize hosting districts. Again, we see this all the time where, you know, small districts, you know, just don't have necessarily the same opportunities that some of the larger districts have. But then the larger districts also struggle to take on additional resources. We've all seen it. You know, everybody's budgets are tight. So if you've got, say, a firefighter training program, which we have in our district, and you need to do some safety equipment upgrades or repairs or maybe some modernization within your welding lab, you can apply for the same kind of a grant and then be able to use those same resources in your home district and then also be able to utilize that to better share within the greater community. So the goal is to try to start getting more into that realm of economy of scale that we struggle with so much here in the state. So we'll go ahead and move on to the presentation here.
Yes, please proceed.
Okay, thank you. All right. You guys don't need me necessarily reading every word here, and I've covered a good chunk of this. The thing I wanted to really kind of point out here on this particular slide is that the incentive grants are performance-based. So we want to see, you know, engagement and better outcomes and paths towards, say, dual credit enrollment, right? So, again, I reference the Kenai Peninsula all the time because we have a lot of things going on that I feel like we're doing good. But, you know, districts need a little bit of help getting some of this stuff more established. And so our middle college, for example, is one of those programs that is on the chopping block this year because of budget restrictions. Well, you could do an incentive grant to do some kind of a middle college type program, and we could also work with other districts to be able to help support and host some of those programs. Now, if you're just taking a math class, then it wouldn't necessarily qualify. But if you're taking a certification path towards, you know, a nursing assistant or a welder or instrumentation, and you're taking a math class then yeah, those would all be tied together because then you start looking at the dual credit and industry type areas, workforce development. Modernization support, again, kind of going back to what I was saying earlier, if your system or your shop, for example, almost all of our schools have some kind of a shop, but if you need some new tools, you know, you want to help kind of get things taken care of and you're going to be hosting and trying to work with other districts, that's an opportunity to be able to do some modernization support within some of your facilities. So it's not capital grants by any means. We're not trying to bypass any capital projects, but this allows for some smaller, more focused modernization supports. Next slide, please. Being able to expand access and again, work with our rural communities or remote communities to be able to help them. They're already doing a tremendous amount of this, but we're just not seeing it. And we're not really supporting them in helping, you know, again, districts like Haines or Bethel or Tuxuk Bay come to areas where we have maybe some additional resources and can host some of these. You know, again, I call them boot camps because that's what we do in the technology industry. We generally host, you know, a week or two boot camp. So what I would like to see is some of our districts be able to do some of that. And so the focus on rural access is, again, one of those things that gives an incentive for a hosting district to be able to host rural and remote communities to be able to help better leverage and utilize some of these systems. Incentive results, the performance incentives, really what we're looking to do is see improved outcomes. We want to see engagement in the academics. We've all heard time and time again an engaged student who's showing up just does better. I mean, and that's what we're looking to do. So we want to see measurable outcomes, and we want to be able to show that, you know, we're seeing, you know, improved results, but also the direction that we're trying to give DEED is that we don't want to create a bunch of an administrative burden with, you know, let's go create another reporting department. We don't need to do that, but we do need to be tracking the outcomes, and we're already doing all of this. So let's connect some of these so that we can do some incentives around some of these outcomes. A lot of the districts already want to do this kind of stuff. Again, I'll reference back to my Kenai Peninsula homeschool district. The CTE coordinator that we have there, Annalia, she does an amazing job at reaching out to so many people. And so from Cisco Networking to Yamaha, and I mean, you name it, the whole variety of them, the middle college, industry. But then we can also work with some of the apprenticeship programs. We can get work tied in with, like, the Department of Labor again, so that we can get these strong industry partnerships to be able to help our students get access, and then also all of our workforce and industry to be able to make those relationships to bring those students the next step post-graduation. And I think I've pretty well covered this slide a fair amount, but we've got all the youth out migration, which has been something that has been kind of on my heart personally. You know, I got three boys, 12, 10, and 7. I don't necessarily want them to feel like they have to stay in Alaska, but I don't want them to feel like they have to leave. And I'm tired of hearing students say time and time again, there's nothing here, I got to go somewhere else. And so the goal here is to try to kind of curb some of that out migration and help people here in Alaska, our students and our youth, feel like they can stay here and continue to work on whatever their passion is. Again, I kind of have this, you know, gone over this one a number of times, so not to keep going on it, but it's pro-workforce, results-driven, supports our rural access, and then it's also supporting our students. And so I would love to have your guys' support on this one, but it really will help our students and our families a lot. All right.
Thank you. And I thank you, Representative Elam. I think that I would like to hear the fiscal note right now. I think that might help answer some questions about how this would be compensated for, and then we can ask questions of yourself if that's all right.
Absolutely. I believe we have some folks from DEED online.
Yes, we have the Deputy Director online. I don't know if she's – usually Heather Honeycomb goes over the fiscal notes, but Director Manning, are you prepared to go over the fiscal notes this morning?
Yes, good morning. Kelly Manning, Deputy Director for the Division of Innovation and Education Excellence. I am available and can go over the fiscal notes.
Good. Thank you very much. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Great. Yes. Kelly Manning, Deputy Director for the Division of Innovation and Education Excellence. Based off of our review of the bill, the grants themselves would be pending appropriation. So our fiscal note reflects the personal services support that would be required to implement and support districts in implementing the grant. So we have a first-year cost of $177,000 for the personal services. And then the regulation requirements. And then the out-year costs would be $171,000 per year for the staffing over the remainder of the years of the grant. And I'm available if you have questions regarding the fiscal note.
Thank you. I do not see. I see 180,000.5. I don't see the 177,000 number on my fiscal note, component number 2796.
Oh,
I apologize. Let me pull up. I must have the wrong version, so I apologize. It is the same component. I must have grabbed the wrong version, so I apologize for that. But it is the staffing needs. So there's the cost for the position itself, and then the charge back. And then in the first year, there's the cost for the getting the position set up, so technology needs, et cetera, to set up the position as required.
We have a question from Rep. Schwanke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for Director Manning. I'm kind of struggling with this fiscal note just a little bit. Is it standard that every time we create a new grant within the state that we have to create a new grant coordinator for just that one grant? Because I don't see that as a necessity for this particular bill. If the funds provided for districts to move forward with consortiums and sharing opportunities and resources across districts, it is subject to annual appropriation. Then some years, if the funds aren't there, then the legislature doesn't appropriate funds, and then this position is still costing the state $180,000 a year. And I just don't see that as a necessity if we were to implement a particular grant opportunity like this, which seems like an amazing opportunity. But do we need another specialist?
Director Manning.
Through the chair to Representative Schwanke, thank you for the question. Again, for the record, Kelly Manning. So for the challenge for the department is if the appropriation is fully funded, then it would take quite a bit of support from the department to implement. So, you know, we need to go based off of the assumption of the grant being funded. And then additionally, there's a number of components around partnering with the Department of Labor. And so this position would support the grant, it would support the districts in implementation, it would support that partnership and consortium establishment. So it would be more than just writing the grant and administering, the support for districts, but also supporting the broader goals of supporting the consortium development, supporting what those needs would look like, helping to provide information on what opportunities are available. So there would be year-round support for implementing. And our current capacity within the department would not accommodate the asks of the bill.
And if I may add to that?
Yes, Rep. Elam.
Bill Elam, for the record. Department of Labor will not have any new additional staff. There's a zero note on that one as well. So I could see where there would be some need for coordination between all of them.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I have a question, Rep. Elam. I think some districts, do they have the staff to do memorandums of agreement? I know some of the districts who probably some and groups who will be testifying next, and maybe they can help answer this question as they think about it. It seems like as they are coordinating, districts share resources. And I don't know if those who have them, some don't even have a career technical coordinator. And have you talked to the districts about how they would implement this?
Bill Elam, for the record, thank you for the question. I've not had extensive conversations with some of the more remote districts. Part of what I would anticipate with DEED is some additional assistance there, as she said. There would be some needs there. They do already currently have a lot of collaboration going on that people don't necessarily see. A lot of it's happening kind of under the waterline. I'm not sure how those districts are actually functioning to make that happen. It would be my expectation that obviously that would be more of an operating capital or operating budget type line item, but it seems that we should be able to help them get some support in that area.
Thank you for that answer. I had another question, and then I think I'll go on to the invited testifiers. It seems like we learned a lot when we hear from them. But you had said this would happen between neighboring districts, or the PowerPoint said neighboring districts. Did you have, like, were you picturing a mile limit? Well, we're so vast, or could someone from Juneau go take something, an aviation course, in another part of the state if the district paid the transportation, things like that? Thank you.
Thank you, Bill Elam, for the record. No, just within the state of Alaska.
Okay, thank you for that. So let's go to some invited testimony. And first off, I have Zach Stenson, the statewide coordinator from Route Ed, Alaska. Mr. Stenson, welcome. If you could introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony, that would be good.
Okay, great. I just want to do a quick sound check. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Very well.
Great. Thank you. This is Zach Stenson, CTE specialist with Pathfinder Solutions, dedicated to expanding CTE and workforce development program for young Alaskans. Good morning, Chair, Co-Chair, members of the House Education Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to express strong support for this bill and this concept. I want to focus my time today on how the proposed Career and Technical Education Mobility Grant program can increase cross-district collaboration, and have really enjoyed the presentation and the questions so far. I see this as a way to really help our rural districts expand what they're able to offer. I know some of the discussion has been around rural districts partnering with some of the larger urban districts, but I also would voice that I think that this bill also could strengthen partnerships across rural districts, and I particularly appreciated the most recent question about, is this meant for just neighboring districts, and appreciate the concept that this is really for students to be able to participate in programs across the state. Vast distances separating our communities and our schools really can keep our programs separated and isolated. While one community may have a strong program, for example, for growing young electricians, another community may have a strong program for building young pilots. And I strongly believe that Alaska as a state really should and could become a leader in the nation in CTE education. There's so many incredible career opportunities for our state, but we don't have systems and supports currently to really energize regional and statewide collaboration that will allow our students, especially our rural students, to have access to broad CTE offerings. So I really wanted to just commend Representative Elam and his team and their efforts to find a way to strengthen and increase this collaboration. In my most recent role for the last 7 years as the executive director of the Bristol Bay Region Career and Technical Education Program, I have seen some incredible opportunities that can be opened through collaboration, and that collaboration being cross-district collaboration across the four districts in the Bristol Bay region. That's inclusive of collaboration when we've collaborated with the Anchorage School District, when we've collaborated with Lower Yukon School District. I think bringing more opportunities to our rural students really can have some strong impact. I believe HB 358 provides a practical solution by really incentivizing this collaboration, encouraging this host district model, allowing students enrolled in one school district to participate in CTE program offerings from a neighboring district. I think also the bill really explicitly protects our rural communities by stating that if funding is limited, the state will prioritize grants for host districts dealing with small populations and geographic or travel challenges. So I just appreciate the thoughtfulness of really keeping a focus on rural districts that may not have these opportunities. Last week I was in Juneau. I sat down with a junior in high school who was trying to find the right way to enter the aviation industry. And I will say Juneau has incredibly strong CTE program offerings, but there's no aviation program at all for that student. And so I quickly was on the phone with other districts that have an aviation program trying to find the right path for this particular student to enter the aviation industry. There's opportunities like this all the time for our high school students. And right now, we just exist in our silos, and it's hard to collaborate. And while that's happening across the state, this bill could really increase that. I wanted to also just mention the high amount of out-of-state work that's happening. This number of $3.8 billion that went to out-of-state employees this last year based on the most recent Department of Labor study, and that I think really from the side of workforce development, this bill could really increase and improve our youth's ability to access trainings across the state, but also access these jobs and careers. So I'll conclude my thoughts by just sharing that HB 358 really ensures that a student zip code doesn't prevent them from learning a valuable trade. It makes cross-district collaboration sustainable, benefits local employers, and really sets up our youth for success in a way that we are working towards, but could really use some incentives for. And I wanted to mention big projects. I'm not knowing if a big project like the LNG project would happen, but this would create a really new way to expand training to really reach a lot of youth across the state as we look at big projects. So thank you so much for your time. I appreciate your service. Everybody on this committee, and especially wanted to thank Representative Elam and his team for just prioritizing expanding CTE access for our students. And I'm happy for answering any questions if that's helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Stenson. Yes, I see two questions. I see that Rep. Hemshut has a question, and then we'll go to Rep. Dybert.
Thank you, Co-Chair Story. Through the chair, Zach, thanks for your time this morning. I'm hoping that with your broad background in CTE, you can answer some fairly basic questions. Right now, when a district needs to add to their equipment or upgrade, or I think importantly, ensure their equipment is safe, I've seen some really old equipment around my house district that, you know, a lot of the stuff was built to be super durable. I'm talking like wood shop equipment. But who's going out and making sure that those items are safe to operate? So my question is, how do districts expand their equipment now, ensure safety, and do upgrades to, I mean, CTE has some tracks in CTE are equipment heavy, and this bill addresses that a little bit. So my question is, right now without this bill, how are districts getting the equipment they need and maintaining?
Yeah, thank you for the question, and through the chair, I guess I will give two answers. One, I will say honestly that as I travel to different rural communities, often what I see is CTE shops that are filled with equipment but not filled with students because of the challenges of having semester-long instructors teaching semester-long classes. So often what that leads to is equipment not being properly maintained. I would say currently, I can't speak for every district. The districts that I've worked with, they prioritize the equipment that they're using for current training. And so often that those funds are being utilized by Perkins, which are limited. The second answer to your question I will give is that through regional collaboration, and I will give the example of the Bristol Bay Consortium, I will give the example of the welding shop in NACNAC, which regionally the districts decided we're going to really focus our welding programs and fly our students into the NACNAC shop. And so as a result, regionally, we focused funds on expanding and really making as modern and current as we could that welding shop, and suddenly that became kind of the regional hub for welding programs. So I think through regional collaboration and through concepts like this bill, there's opportunity to strengthen that. But I guess I'll also just recognize that not all, you know, that and especially in our current kind of fiscal environment, not all of those programs and not all of that equipment really is currently in use.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Thank you, Co-Chair Story. So, Zach, through the chair, which funding is used? Can you use Perkins funding for maintenance and purchase of equipment, or is that usually from the BSA and the factor in the BSA, the block grant factor? Like, how are districts? And if you don't know, I can ask someone else. But I just thought you might know with your background.
Yeah, through the chair, I would say that what I've seen most for CTE facility equipment upgrades has been being used with specific either Perkins or through or for more rural districts through individual federal grants. Those would be the two ways, but yeah, I can't speak for each district individually and how, but that's what I've seen, I guess, on a broadly speaking of how those funds are being used to upgrade equipment.
Follow up, Rep. Hemshire.
Thank you, Co-Chair Story. My last question for you, Zach. Thank you for your time this morning. I really appreciate it. Through the chair, can you tell me, I swear some of the equipment I've seen around my house district is decades old, and so at some point, we had CTE, and back then I believe it was called VOTEC or VOCTEC. So how did Alaska do it before, and why are we not doing it now? Like, I understand this bill and excited about this bill, but why do we need this bill? Like, what changed? We used to do this. Why did we stop doing it? Can you speak to that? And I should be clear to you, Zach, when I say we used to do this, not necessarily the sharing so much, but districts had more robust programs. What happened? I guess that's the question.
Mr. Stinson?
Yeah. Through the chair, I will give an answer. I think the answer is probably bigger than either for me to answer or that we have time for in this particular meeting, but I would say that bigger picture as you know, funding over the years in our education system has shrunk. I think districts have had to make priorities, and keeping the core academic priorities, often I would say that programs like our career education have gotten reduced. So that would be the big picture answer that I would give. But there's a lot more nuances to that I don't know that I'm prepared to answer at this time.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you for that. We're going to go to Rep. Dybert, and then we're going to go to our next invited testifier. Rep. Dybert.
Yes, thank you, through the chair, to Mr. Stinson, I believe, can answer this, maybe. Thank you for sharing your story about NACNEC welding and how neighboring students could come to NACNEC and get training. I only kind of know my interior Fairbanks area. We have some welding CTE programs. And what I'm hearing from the interior is that they're having trouble funding welding material for their current student population. So if students were to travel, more students would come on, that's less material and probably create wait lists. I don't know what you're seeing across the state when it comes to funding these CTE programs with enough aviation supplies, enough welding supplies. Just thinking ahead. Thank you so much.
Mr. Stinson?
Yes, through the chair, great question. I appreciate the thoughtfulness of thinking ahead and you know, if this works, how do we ensure that we have the materials available? I would say that through collaboration, shared collaboration, one thing that this really opens up is shorter-term 40-hour trainings, and those shorter-term 40-hour trainings really have clearly defined materials. It's really fairly simple to, well, I shouldn't say simple, simpler than planning for a semester-long class when you have 40 hours a week-long training. And so through opportunities like short-term trainings, I think that, and through opportunities like this bill specifically, I think there's going to be clear opportunities to define what will the materials be specifically for a class. So I would hope that this had no negative impact. And I would just give the example that often when in the Brisa Bay Region Consortium, students travel from multiple communities into one hub community to participate in a class. I think pretty much every time that happens, we overestimate exactly how many materials, and so the home hosting district ends up with extra materials. And specifically for welding, I could say that often those students in those districts end up with extra materials to utilize for things like this welding program, as well as just improved quality of the equipment and more modern equipment. So. I would say through short-term intensive trainings, through collaboration, I would say the end result would most likely be increased supplies for training for the local host district.
Thank you, Mr. Stenson. Also, Rep. Tybert asked about wait lists. Do you currently have wait lists in aviation or other welding areas that you are aware of across districts?
Yeah, through the chair, thank you for for the second portion, yes, I would say that the goal of cross-district collaboration is to create and expand more opportunities for students. So, yes, while those programs do often end up with wait lists, the end result is just more classes, more students are able to participate. So there's a really strong interest on the part of students to participate in these trainings. And so, yeah, as we create more opportunities, then it is true that we end up creating more wait lists. But I think specifically we haven't had a bill like this. We haven't had a funding source. And so all of the programs many of the programs that have been developed through direct industry partnerships and through a broad mix of funding streams. I would say as a director in Bristol Bay, I often managed about 14 different funding streams to be able to offer the programs that we could offer. And so by creating a sustainable statewide funding stream, I think that would simplify this and hopefully even just allow us to offer more programs to students. And we base our programs on wait lists. And if it's a big interest area, we find different ways to expand. Thank you for the question.
And thank you for your testimony today. We're going to go on to Analia Karen next, who is the Kenai Peninsula School District College and Career Coordinator. And then we will go to public testimony after that. So welcome, Ms. Karen. Could you please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Analia Karen, and I am the College and Career Readiness Coordinator for the Kenai Peninsula School District. I'm also the Secretary for the Alaska CTE State Board. And so today I want to just share with you a couple of positives that this bill has the potential to provide, not only to our district on the Kenai, but statewide. Kind of three main points. First off, if you look across the board nationally, there is a huge need for career and technical education programs. We're seeing shortages in areas like plumbing and electrical, as well as things like welding and petroleum. And so I really appreciate Representative Elam and his emphasis on career and technical education and seeing that need across our state. One of the things that this bill would do is increase the collaboration between the Department of Ed and the Department of Labor. And I think that is a valuable effort. If we look nationally, the Perkins grant at the national level has kind of moved and been transferred over under Department of Labor. And so this bill mirrors what's being done at the national level and provides the encouragement for that collaboration between the two departments. One of the big things that we see in our district is we have lots of programs that are up and running. But we're also a very widespread district. So we have schools like Kenai and Soldotna that are your traditional brick and mortar kind of comprehensive high schools. And I also have schools like Soldovia that has 12 students, K-12, as well as Tabona and Port Graham and Nanwalek that are over across the water fly-in locations. And so we're really trying to serve a wide variety of students and provide lots of opportunities in diverse settings. And so that collaboration just means that things that are already being done in the Department of Labor, like pre-apprenticeships, are things that we can utilize with our 16 to 18-year-olds in the high school setting as well. And it just will provide more open doors for those students to have training opportunities. One of the things that I see pretty routinely is students who are very interested in getting into a work setting, whether that's going and working in an auto shop or being a mechanic or a welder. But currently, the way that the legislation is set up and the way that the labor laws are enacted, a lot of employers are very hesitant to have those 16 to 18-year-olds in those work environments. And so by having collaboration between the Department of Ed and Department of Labor, hopefully we can blow those doors open and provide opportunities for students to get into pre-apprenticeships earlier and be able to get work experience and earn those certifications on the job. And so I'm excited to see that built into the bill and encouraged to provide that collaboration. The second piece that I think is really important is the funding source for that collaboration. Currently on the Kenai Peninsula, we do a number of intensives. Healthcare is one of our big focuses over the last couple of years. And we work with the Alaska Health Education Consortium to do week-long camps. We offer a camp in Homer, in Soldotna, and in Seward. So we're doing that regionally currently for our own students. But we've had other districts that have reached out and asked to participate in those programs. And the piece that we haven't been able to figure out is that funding component of if you have a student from Anchorage or Mat-Su or smaller communities like Whittier or Kodiak that want to participate, how do we charge for that and how do we compensate for that so that we can buy the equipment and the materials that are needed for those students? And so this would provide a mechanism to be able to open those programs and have students who are interested in a pathway that we already have available be able to participate more easily. And then I think the third piece Representative Elam touched on is just that cost of upkeep of our buildings. Currently on the Kenai Peninsula, I have three buildings that have limited capacity in our welding shops. What you'll see across the board is that as funding becomes limited and things get more expensive, career and technical education programs are adversely affected by funding shortages. It's a whole lot more expensive to keep a welding shop open and to buy steel and welding rod than it is to buy textbooks for a language arts classroom. And with the state initiative for the READS Act and the emphasis on our core literacy components, districts have put money into those programs and not funded our career and technical education programs. And so as a result of that, a lot of our shop buildings are failing OSHA inspections where we don't have the HVAC systems that we need to be able to provide the airflow needed for welding shops. And that's something that is federally mandated that we're required to do. And as a result, we have to close down some of our welding booths, which limits the number of students that can be in those spaces. So I'm really excited to see that emphasized in the bill as well, so that maybe we can use some of this funding to then be able to upgrade those shops and provide environments that are similar to what students are going to see in the work environment and be able to provide the certifications and the things that they need. So I'm super excited that this has been introduced and excited to move forward with an emphasis on career and technical education in the state. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I do want to go to public testimony, but Rep. Hemshut promises me she has a short question. I'm very much aware of the time. We have two other items on our agenda today. So, Rep.
I'll be as fast Rep. as I can. Hemshut. This question is for Ms. Karen. And very quickly, through the chair, the bill is based on performance measures, including number of certificates. So is it – I just don't know CTE personally all that well. So is a certificate awarded for 40 hours of completion in every area? I mean, so much of what we do in schools is you're learning and you don't necessarily get to an end point. You could do 40 hours of of content without getting a certificate? Or are the certificates that are referenced in the bill, are those generally in 40-hour segments?
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, it really depends on the program. So welding, for example, students can often do 40 hours of welding training and not complete a certification at the end, or there's an opportunity, we use the AWS curriculum, and so they could test and earn a certificate on one position of welding, like a 3F, and not continue to earn additional certifications. So it really depends on the individual program and what's available. It also requires certification from the instructors. So for example, in welding, a welding instructor to be a CWI certified welding instructor requires about 100 hours of their training to become certified to be able to offer that certification to students. And so that becomes a barrier for us. On the Kenai Peninsula, I currently don't have an instructor who is a CWI, and so we have to utilize programs like NIT up in Palmer and take our students to a facility where they can earn those certifications, which comes at an additional cost. Other programs like a CNA or an EMT program, those certifications are embedded in that coursework, and they're going to earn that certificate when they complete that class.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for that, and I am going to allow Rep. Schwanke to ask a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try to be quick. Ms. Karen, I'm not sure I got the name correct there. My apologies. You started off your testimony by saying that there's a huge need for plumbing and electrical, and so I wanted to follow up and just ask. So I believe last year we discussed a line item in the budget that was, forgive me if I'm off here, but somewhere around $400,000 that was specifically multi-year appropriation that was designed to create a collaboration and support a collaboration between DEED and DOL specifically for curriculum development and apprenticeship programs for plumbing and electrical. And I'm curious how many students in your district benefited from that appropriation.
Thank you, Ms. for the question. Through the chair, currently on the Kenai Peninsula, we do not have any students participating in a welding and electrical program. Avtech is one of our providers, and they are working on a dual credit pathway to be able to allow high school students to enroll and take classes through Avtech, but that is not currently in place. And the biggest piece with welding and plumbing, electrical and plumbing at the moment, is the availability of plumbing and electrical instructors. So when folks can go up to the slope and make six figures as a welder or as a plumber, we are having a really difficult time enticing them to come and teach in a high school setting. And so the lack of instructors has kind of prevented the growth of that program so far.
Just a quick follow-up. The reason I wanted to bring this up through the chair really is just that we have seen collaborative programs. We've seen large dollar amounts put into collaborative opportunities between state departments, and my concern is the money doesn't trickle down to the students. So I just needed to throw that out there.
Thank you for the comment. I do know that we have Brad Billings online with the Career and Technical Education through DEED, through the Division of Innovation and Education Excellence. This is obviously a very important bill and topic, expanding CTE in our across the state for all of us. And so I'll look forward to our next conversations about this. And perhaps Mr. Billings can be back online and we can answer more questions about the $400,000 thing that item that happened last year and how that has gone. But I do want to go to public testimony since we advertised that today. And so I'm going to open public testimony for House Bill 358. Testifiers will have 2 minutes for their testimony. I want to remind the listening public that if they would like to testify, they may call into the LIO office right now using the following telephone numbers in Juneau: 907-586-9085, in Anchorage 907-563 9085, and in all other areas of the state, 907-586. Oops, that's not right. All other states, 907, is it 888? I'm sorry. Brief at ease. We are back on the record. Sorry about that. All other areas of the state, it's 844-586-9085. Did I hit the gavel? We are back on record. So public testimony is now open. Is there anyone here in the room who would like to testify? I do not see anyone here in the room, so we will go online. Is there anyone online who would like to testify? Not seeing anyone online. Public testimony is now closed. Want to remind people that they can write about this bill to house.education@akledge.gov if they would like to send in any written comments. So I am going to hold House Bill 358 over at this time, set it aside. So we can have more discussions and work on it. Thank you very much, both of you, for being here with us today. We are going to go to House Bill 240 on digital harassment and non-consensual digital impersonation, sponsored by Representative Nelson, whom we heard from last week on this bill. I invite Representative Nelson and his staff, Donna Page, to the table. Please identify yourself for the record and begin your presentation.
Good morning, Co-Chair Story and Co-Chair Himshute and members of the House Education Committee. For the record, I am Representative David Nelson, serving Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson, Government Hill, and East Anchorage. Really thank you for the opportunity to present House Bill 240, an act requiring school districts to adopt digital harassment and non-consensual digital impersonation policy again. House Bill 240, as was discussed last week, establishes new definitions and compels school districts to create specific policies for the treatment of digital harassment and non-consensual digital impersonation. School districts already have these policies in place around bullying, and this legislation adds this new method of harassment to those policies. In the last hearing, committee members had questions about freedom of speech and what kind of digital expression could be considered harassment. And speaking with stakeholders, we came to understand that emojis could fall under digital harassment. And regarding the freedom of expression concern, this is a weightier issue with many gray areas. So we will share what our experts can provide with the committee in the days to come. The bill carries zero fiscal note from DEED. When we also heard from the Anchorage School District, the Office of the Superintendent, who sent us the following remarks, and if it's the will of the committee, I would like to read those into the record.
Yes, please.
Thank you. And of course, quoting the email, we appreciate the legislature's attention to evolving challenges surrounding digital harassment and the increasing concerns related to non-consensual digital impersonation. After reviewing the bill and our existing policies and administrative regulations, Anchorage School District is largely in compliance with the requirements outlined in HB 240. Our current school board policy and administrative regulation, along with the ASD's student handbook, already contain strong and clear language addressing bullying, harassment, and cyberbullying, including misuse of electronic communication devices. While the term non-consensual digital impersonation is not specifically referenced, the conduct described in the bill would fall within our existing definitions of cyberbullying and digital harassment. That said, given the rapid expansion of artificial intelligence tools and the increasing potential for misuse, we believe that explicitly addressing non-consensual digital impersonation in statute and district policy is reasonable and timely. Clarifying this conduct in law may help districts remain proactive, ensure consistent applications across the state, and support student safety in a rapidly changing digital environment. Regarding the bill's training provision, ASD currently provides professional development related to bullying, harassment, and digital citizenship. Should the Department of Education and Early Development develop model policies and training materials specific to digital impersonation, these resources could be helpful in strengthening staff awareness and response protocols. Overall, we view House Bill 240 as aligned with existing digital district practices and supportive of ongoing efforts to protect students from emerging forms of digital harm. That is the email we have received, and I'd be glad to give a copy to the committee. We've also heard that school districts already have policies in place around bullying and harassment, and House Bill 240 would bolster those policies by updating the type of harassments included in those policies. As we heard in the testimony last week in the first hearing, this is an issue affecting school children now. And I look forward to any questions or concerns from the committee.
Thank you. And yes, please submit the email that you read, and we will post that on BASIS too. So it'll be part of the record. Do we have any questions from the committee? I see Rep. Schwanke has questions, and then Rep. Eisscheid.
Thank you, through the chair. Thank you, Rep. Nelson. As we discussed, this is a really critical time in our history. We're seeing some technology increase to the point where we're having a hard time keeping up. So I appreciate you bringing this to the attention of the committee and the public. I'm curious, have you had conversations with AASB, Alaska Association of School Boards, because they do a lot of model policy and they push it out to their membership, which is broad, and I believe they currently now have all state school districts as members or potentially missing one. But it would seem almost that if AASB was willing to write a specific model policy pertaining to this issue, that I don't see any reason why districts would not take it seriously and consider adopting it. So
yes.
Yes. Rep. Nelson.
Thank you, Co-Chair Story. And through the Co-Chair to Representative Schwanke, yes, we have talked to Lon Anderson with AASB.
Garrison,
my apologies.
Yeah, that's okay.
It's Monday. With AASB, we had some initial conversations. They're still working through a couple updates on their side, but hopefully within this week that they'll get a formal response to us.
Okay,
and I'll make that available to the committee.
Thank you. Yes, please send it to my office, and we'll make sure to get that distributed. Rep. Eisscheid.
Thank you, Co-Chair Story. Through the Co-Chair, Representative Nelson, the email you read from Anchorage School District, I believe, talked about cyberbullying, and they felt that their present policies covered what the intent of this bill was, even though they provided further clarification. So I guess that's the question. I'm just looking at a definition of cyberbullying. It's been something that's been going on for a long time. My school district in Wisconsin had cyberbullying policies. Does a cyberbullying policy cover what you are trying to achieve in this bill?
Through the chair to Representative Eisscheid, for the record, Representative David Nelson. Cyberbullying is just one section of this, also to include non-consensual digital impersonation, as was described in the email that I was reading. I kind of see this as two separate things that are close to each other, but still good to have in state statute and for districts to have in their policies.
Follow up, Rabbi Eisscheid?
Perhaps at a later time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I do not see any other questions at this time. I think we'll look forward to seeing Rep. Garrison's response, Lon Garrison, the Executive Director of Alaska Associations of School Boards. Yes, it is Monday. and so I'm going to hold over HB 240, and when we get that response, we will bring the bill back up and for more discussion. So thank you very much. Next, we will bring back up House Bill 246, sponsored by Representative Josephson, whom we heard from last week on the bill, an act relating to allocations for the Special Education Services Agency, known as CESA. I invite Representative Josephson, but I see that he is in subcommittee, but we are fortunate to have Ken Elper, his staff, with us today. So if you could identify yourself for the record and begin any of your remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Ken Alper, staff to Representative Josephson. Apologize on the representative's behalf. They do have the university subcommittee happening. I believe I was asked here primarily to talk about the fiscal note and then to answer questions. If you like, I could talk about the fiscal note to start.
Yes, please proceed, Mr. Alper.
Sure. So House Bill 246 has one fiscal note from the Department of Education. I think members should all have it. It's OMB component 2735 on the little control code in the lower right corner, HJQJW. It's a pretty straightforward note. I would draw members' attention to the second column first, included in the governor's FY27 request, a little less than $2.9 million. That's the current budget for the Special Education Service Agency, and that's a statutory formula. As you know, Madam Chair, the bill is intended to modify the number that goes into that, the $23.13. What that's multiplied by per statute is the average daily membership for the previous fiscal year. So this is next year's budget. It's the average daily membership for the current fiscal year, which is just under 125,000 students. The ADM is not is sort of the starting point of the base student allocation formula. It's the raw count of the number of K to 12 students in the state before you get into the district cost and the school size factors and all those other items. So straight multiplication of $23.13 times that 124,900 and so gets you that $2.9 million. And then the bill, by raising the multiplier, raising the per student number to $26.89, would therefore add $469,900 to the budget, and that's what the fiscal note does. It's just straight multiplication.
Thank you for that. I also wanted to note that we have Deb Riddle, divisions operators for the Department of Early Education Development online, Genevieve Hollins, business manager, Special Education Service Agency, and Olivia Yancey, executive director of Special Education Service Agency, CESA, online for the committee's questions right now, either Mr. Alper or anyone that we have online. I do not see anyone having questions. I do see that Ms. Yancey would like to make a few remarks to the committee. Ms. Yancey, please unmute yourself, identify yourself for the record, and proceed.
Greetings. This, for the record, this is Olivia Yancey, Executive Director from Special Education Service Agency. I must have misrepresented myself. No comments at this time, but I welcome any questions. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Are there any questions? There was an amendment deadline set for this bill, and we received no amendments. It is my intent to move this bill out of committee today. I know that we have a legal obligation to meet the needs of our special education students, and CESA seeks to do that and seeks to save districts monies because, for one thing, we have a shortage of special education professionals, particularly speech therapists, people working with autism, just many, many different specialties and important services that they provide. I see it as critical to try and help our students when they are younger so they could reach their STAR potential. Rep. Hemshoot, you have some questions or comments.
No, I wanted to add to what you're saying right now, and I think it's significant to note that as enrollment declines, funding to this agency declines, and yet the need has gone up. So the formula wasn't intended to work, and it doesn't work if enrollment declines but need goes up. In theory, enrollment would decline and the need would go down, but that isn't what's happening. So given given that gap between available funding through the formula and the need of more students who need these services, I think the gap is evident. So I support the bill.
I do not see any other comments. Rep. Hemshoot, may I have a motion?
Yes. I move HB 246 version 34-LS1255/A from the House Education Committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Are there any objections? If there are no objections, without objection, House Bill 246 version 34-LS1255/A with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations has been moved out of the House Education Committee. I'm going to actually adjourn us, but if you could stay here to sign the documents, I would appreciate that, committee member, committee members. I want to know that on Wednesday, March 4th, the finance, which, God, it's amazing to me that it's March. It's amazing to me. On Wednesday, March 4th, the Finance Subfinance Committee will be meeting for its closeout. The House Education Committee will meet if time allows following the closeout of the subcommittee. On Friday, March 6th, we have no meeting scheduled this week. So this concludes our committee hearing, and it is 9. Oh, good, good. 9:43 a.m. Thank you, everyone. The meeting is now adjourned.